You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games, only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerd Podcast. I'm Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
And we actually have a guest today for the opening of the show. We're here with Luann at Cutter's Cigar Emporium.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
And we'll get to the reason why we're here today in a minute, but this is part of the show where we talk about what we're smoking this week. And I usually ask Brad this question, but since we have a guest... What are we smoking this week, Luann?
This week we are smoking the Don Pepin Garcia Original, otherwise known as the Don Pepin Blue.
Yeah, this is the first time I'm smoking this cigar. We actually got one of our listeners emailed us a couple suggestions. This is one of the ones that was on it. This is the first time I had a chance to smoke it. I'm really, really liking it.
It is a tried and true classic.
Yes. I mean, it's got an awesome flavor profile. A little bit of spice, but also, too, a little bit of the leather textures, and I'm digging it all the way.
That's what I read, because I do like a nice peppery flavor, and this has definitely got a pepper notes to it. A Corojo Oscuro wrapper, Nicaraguan filler, Nicaraguan binder.
Dude, I mean, we've been on a Nicaraguan kick for like the last, three, four cigars now?
I think so.
I think we need to broaden our horizons. Oh, wait, yeah. No, Nicaragua just does it right.
That's
yeah,
right.
And like I said, last week we tried the My Father Lounge Exclusive, and this is another one of their brands. So, yeah, this is definitely going to be one that we can recommend.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
This cigar is going into its second decade of production, so it has stood the test of time when many others have come and gone.
It's one of their original blends.
Yes, it is one of Pepin's original blends that was originally made in Miami, I believe, and moved to the factory in Esteli.
Awesome.
Yeah.
We need to get her on more episodes because she actually does the pronunciations and everything that I typically butcher.
Yeah, that's the bad part about looking up information online. We don't have the proper pronunciations. We just know what we like. We don't know how to actually accurately describe it.
I can't trill my R's, so don't ask me to do that.
Practice makes perfect.
And the reason why we're here on location this time is we've already talked about it on the show that we are going to the Southern Cigar Festival coming up on June 6th, and you know, Cutter's is the runner of it. It's y'all's.
It is our
grand
baby.
Plan,
yes, so. It is our anniversary extravaganza that we do every year. The last couple of years we have done it here in our parking lot, and we've outgrown that space, so we have moved on to bigger and better venues. And the Verizon Amphitheater at Encore Park is going to be a phenomenal venue, a perfect venue for this type of event.
Oh, yeah. I mean, no, what, rain, shine? I mean, you're going to be covered.
Absolutely.
You're going to be comfortable. I couldn't believe, you know, when I started looking up the information about the event and everything, that a venue as big as the Verizon Amphitheater, you know, that was kind of dumbfounding to me. I was like, holy crap, this is going to be awesome.
Yes, this is not a parking lot cigar event with white tents. This is full-on concert venue.
Yeah, I've never heard of a big event like this outside of, like, you know, whatever, Vegas has the big smokes like every year, but this is definitely the first one I've heard of in the Southeast.
Dude, that's because we can barely get you out of Dawsonville.
Yeah, I definitely need to get out more, but yeah, Alpharetta is not that far, so.
No. Well, Russ Sutton is our owner, and he is known to do things in a very classy way, and when he sets his mind to something, it's all the way or not at all, and so we have taken it to the top. We're very much looking forward to hosting everyone and sharing the Southern hospitality.
So what all is going to be there that people will see that when they come out?
Well, first and most importantly, we're going to have great cigars, what every good cigar event needs, right?
Of course.
So we are we're going to land somewhere between 30 and 35 various brands we're going to be representing that day.
Awesome.
So someone will be there to sell all these sticks. The participants who have either a VIP ticket or a gold ticket are going to get a stick from every single one of those brands.
Nice. And, you know, that was a big selling point for us. I mean, for the price of your ticket,
yeah,
you're essentially getting more than a box worth of cigars.
Yeah.
So, you know, for, what, $150 or $125, you can't beat it.
No,
yeah, especially
you really
when
can't.
You're getting that variety of all the different sticks. You're not just getting, you know, 30 of one cigar. Yeah, you're definitely going to be able to sample, and that and having, like, some reps and stuff there, you can actually talk to the people that are, you know, responsible for selling these brands and can really talk to you about the cigars.
Absolutely, and for a lot of the brands that are there, we're going to actually have the faces behind the brand, so the
awesome.
People responsible for the brands are going to be there, and I can run through a few people for me.
Go for it.
Absolutely.
We're going to have Glenn Case with Christoph.
Awesome.
The brand ambassador for Villiger, Jax, I can't say her last name, but Jax is going to be there. So we're looking forward to having her. Brian Chinnick of Chinnick Sellers. We'll have Oscar with GTO Cigars. With Aroa, we're going to have Gabby coming to see everyone. Bob Moreno with La Polina. We have, for those that are familiar with the relatively new Leaf by Oscar cigar that has been incredibly popular here in our store.
I haven't had a chance to try it yet, but I'm looking forward
to it. Yes, you will definitely enjoy that. We're going to have both Island Jim and, I'm probably going to screw up Oscar's last name, but I believe it's Vivaldis.
That's okay. We screw up names all the time on here.
Eddie Ortega is going to be there.
Oh, nice.
Sean Williams with El Primer Mundo. Scott Weeks with Recluse, Eddie Tarazona. There's just going to be a tremendous lineup of folks that we'll have there that day.
And, of course, there's going to be food and drinks and even entertainment. I know you also have going to have some bands. And
we do have, I think, a few bands lined up, actually. We have a great Cuban band that's going to be playing. We'll have a
phenomenal... Set the mood.
Exactly. It will definitely set the right vibe for shopping for cigars and smoking and having a great time outdoors. We are going to have a DJ that has actually been at our shop quite a few times on Friday night party events. And his name is Chris. He does a phenomenal job, so he'll keep everything rolling throughout the day. And we are not quite ready to announce our finale band just yet, but it's going to be a big party to close out the night.
Awesome. And tickets are still available at this point as well?
Yes, tickets are still available. However, the VIP tickets are gone. So if you had aspirations of the VIP...
Yeah, and I would, we talked about it on our last episode, but I would encourage folks to come to Cutters, check out the shop, buy your tickets here, save the, you know, excess handling fees and everything else for Ticketmaster, and, you know, put the money directly back into the founder's hands.
Absolutely, and to thank everyone for making the trip into the shop to get their tickets. We're actually giving away a couple of free sticks when you stop in and buy it. So with your purchase of your $150 gold ticket, you get any two My Father cigars that you would like.
Yeah, that's where our that My Father Lounge exclusive we reviewed last week came from. It was one of our bonus cigars when we came to get our tickets, and we were not disappointed. It was worth making.
No, not at all. I mean, it was a great gateway. I had not been exposed to a whole lot of the My Father stuff, so, you know, it was great to try to smoke and really open the door for me to go out and venture more into their lineup.
Absolutely, and we are planning to have Pepin there for the day.
Nice.
So we're expecting him to make a guest appearance, and very hopeful that's going to happen. We're looking forward to that. He has been a big hit at our anniversary event for the last couple of years.
Awesome. And y'all doing like a pre-party too on Friday night, aren't
we
you?
We are, Friday night.
So if
night.
Anybody who's going to be in town early for the event, you can stop by Friday and hang out.
Yeah. Definitely, and that's going to be more of a My Father event that evening. So Taven, our rep for My Father, will be here, and we'll have some great deals on those sticks. And I understand, too, that we're also going to be featuring the Larceny with Eddie Ortega and Sean Williams. So
yeah, we tried those last night when we came down here, and
That's definitely a cigar that we need to get on a segment. And
That one may be a future
future
review, because I enjoyed it.
No maybe to it, definitely.
Absolutely. So, yeah, we'll have the kickoff Friday evening with some festivities here at the shop, and we'll roll right into Saturday morning and get geared up for the VIP reception and opening of the show at 2 o'clock.
And the cigar nerds will be roaming around there. Maybe we'll we'll bring our mobile studio with us and see if we can snag some interviews while we're
Absolutely.
There.
That'd be great.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to travel with less cables.
some on-the-spot cigar reviews. I mean, to me, it's a great time to be a smoker. We were just talking about this last night. It seems like cigar culture itself is kind of in the middle of this renaissance now that, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you didn't really see any cigar shops, and now pretty much every town has not just a cigar shop, but a cigar lounge where you can hang out and smoke. It's definitely turned into the new big social event.
I mean, I think that's the big thing about smoking cigars. I mean, yeah, the cigars are great, but the company and the relaxation and everything else that comes with it just makes it that much more superb.
Yeah, I mean, I have been working on my home cigar lounge, but it's definitely more fun to come out to one of these events and one of these stores and meet new people than just sitting alone in your basement. I mean, cigar is good anywhere, but it's better when you have people with you. And that's, I think, one of going to be the great things about this event is meeting a lot more of the, not just the local smokers, but, I mean, there's people coming in from all over for this event.
Absolutely. And if you guys look up over your head, over our doorway, it says there are no strangers here, only friends who have not met. And that is how we run our business, and that's how we are treating this event. We have people coming from all over the country. We are looking forward to welcoming everyone, again, showing them some great Southern hospitality and embracing that cigar culture where everybody can get together and have a great time smoking cigars.
Sounds good to me. As we kind of wrap up here, how can people find your stores, follow you online, all that stuff?
Sure. Well, you can find us for the Southern Cigar Festival. We have a great website, southerncigarfestival.com. You can follow us on Facebook, Cutter's Cigars, or you can find our website at cutterscigars.com.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us on the show, and we'll look forward to seeing y'all again two weekends from now.
Absolutely.
My calendar's all screwed
up. If not before.
Yeah, we'll probably be back before then. We'll definitely probably be back for at least the Friday event, if not sooner. What about you said you wanted to, there's some sponsors, some events, some stuff you're giving away.
Yes, we have some great sponsors that have really embraced this event, and we're looking forward to featuring them there. We've got the Big Green Egg. We've got
awesome.
The guys from Cigar Coop. Cigar and Spirits magazine is going to be there. There's going to be lots of cigar press coverage.
Cigar and Spirits. That's been a good magazine. I like it. It's not like Cigar Aficionado stuff is a little bit, you know, more high dollar, not mm-hmm. the average smoke stuff. And they seem a lot more stuff that's in my price range.
Not only that, but too, you know, the graphic appeal and everything. I mean, they've always got badass artwork and other stuff going on.
Yeah,
so I've
enjoyed that that magazine.
Yeah, some other folks that will be there helping support us. We've got the Stogie Geeks. We've got the Guayabera Lady. Jay Austin Bow Ties, so we can get everybody looking spiffy.
Give me a new bow tie.
Joyce is going to be there with her mobile cigar lounge. If you've never seen, with lashes and mustaches, if you have never seen her Airstream trailer that is turned
right,
into a phenomenal
lounge. I think we're just going to have
lounge.
To go steampunked out.
Yeah, it's going to be incredible. So we have these great sponsors. Also, all of the cigar vendors that are there that day are throwing in some great prizes. We're going to be giving something away about every 15 minutes. Our grand prize for the day is going to be a Big Green Egg.
Oh, yeah,
so
definitely going
to
be.
We're going to have to take the truck down for that.
You definitely want to be able to get that one home if you win it. We have a $1,000 Gurkha cigar that is infused with Louis Trey cognac.
Yes, I saw that last. Brad was like, hey, check this out. I'm like, was it $1,000? He's like, yeah. I'm like, I was just joking about that.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, no, that's serious.
Yep, so we're going to be giving that away at our event. And we've also got some kind of Cutter's things that we're going to be launching that day. We have the 50th anniversary Padron Gorgeous White Humidors that are coming.
Nice.
We'll have some of those cigars in both the Natural and the Maduro for that day. We are also releasing our new lounge exclusive. So you guys smoked the lounge exclusive last week.
Yeah.
But that one is coming to an end. So if you really love that one, I know where you can get a box.
Sounds good to me.
But we're launching the new lounge exclusive for that event. It's a similar blend, but it's a completely different size. It's going to be a box press 60 by 6.
Oh, awesome.
So a little bigger gauge, so a little more bang for your buck. Smokes very smoothly. We also have a blend that Russ, our owner, has blended specifically for the store that is branded the Monolito. That one is going to be also launching that day. And we have Peter Shaw from Panama City Beach at PCB Cigars is going to be here with some fine and rare cigars. So he has some things that you probably never thought you'd see in your lifetime. It'll be interesting just to look at them, but some lucky yeah. folks will probably take some of those home with them as well. So
it's one of those, it's like, I want them, but then I'm like, I'm not going to want to smoke them. It's going to be like, they're just too long.
It's going to go in a trophy case somewhere.
Yeah. That'll be a special event event cigar.
So it is definitely going to be a tremendous big smoke event for Atlanta that we've never had anything like it. So.
And yeah, there's, for people that are coming in from out of town, want to do a little drinking and not drive home, there's several hotels convenient to the event. I mean, there's one right across the street.
Yeah,
from the,
we're looking at the Hyatt Place from our front porch here at the store. So the Hyatt Place on Windward Parkway, it's a perfect place to stay. It's roughly, 10 minutes from the venue, if
yeah.
that, and right in our backyard, so you can take part in both Friday and Saturday's events quite easily.
Sounds awesome. So definitely come out, and I said as we wrap this up, we'll be right back with the Kevin Smith episode. Stay tuned. And we're back. This is going to be our Kevin Smith episode. Before we get in that, we had the interview with Luann of Cutter Cigars. If you haven't got your tickets yet and you still need to get tickets, go to the store and get them. And when you do, tell them the Cigar Nerd sent you, because if we get enough recommendations, then they're going to do something cool for us. So please, please, please go buy your tickets and say, hey, we heard those two cigar smoking idiots say that we should come out in here and do this, so we'll get
we get hookups, and if we get hookups, then you listeners will start getting hookups. It just rolls downhill.
Yeah, or we at least look cooler. All right, Kevin Smith.
Yeah, the guy's a actor, screenwriter, film producer, public speaker, director, podcaster, freaking all over the place.
Comic book shop owner.
Yes.
I think
he is the epitome of what we were trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, one of the reasons why, I've always thought he was cool is he's kind of who I wanted to be when I grew up. And then I failed miserably at it. But
that's because you haven't grown up yet.
True. But, I mean, the dude's done everything. Like you said, he's written books. He's written comic books, made movies, podcasts. He's even done, been an actor in a few things. I mean, the dude has done pretty much everything that he has dreamed about doing. He's accomplished, and it was always on his own merit. He is definitely the definition of what I call a self-made man.
I would agree with that. And it hasn't come without trials and tribulations and everything else for him. But, he always plays his cards right, and at the end, things always just seem to find a way to work out, and, he's not afraid to do things off the cuff, which is something that I really appreciate.
I mean, one of the reasons why, like I said, we'll probably start off talking about his original View Askew movies, the Askewniverse, if you will, that was, what he started off with Clerks and most of the movies after they all take place in, you know, the Jersey area, and they're all connected with, you know, they're not sequels to each other. You can watch one and not know, not have to watch the other ways to get what's going on. But for people that are fans, there's always references to the other movies, and, you know, they're all kind of woven
interconnected
together.
Yeah, woven together, I think is how I would put it. But
yeah, they're connected without, like, being sequels to one another.
Yes.
And I think one of the reasons why they, those groups of movies always stuck with me was it was, the characters talked like me and my friends talked. You know, there it wasn't a lot of, you know, Hollywooded up bullshit. I mean,
no,
how many times
have we had... It was foul-mouthed, it was, you know,
raw. It was foul-mouthed. And there's so many, like, pop culture references. I mean, how many times have we been sitting at the cigar shop having a smoke and a freaking big, you know, philosophical discussion about Star Wars broke out?
Only twice. Only twice.
This week.
So.
But yeah, constant freaking, yeah, Star Wars arguments. And it's, like I said, the especially Clerks. I mean, Clerks was like his first movie, released in 94. But it was, I mean, he filmed it where he worked. I mean, he basically worked with what he had access to. Like, so he's like, yeah, I work in a convenience store. I'll write a movie about a bunch of, you know, assholes that work at a convenience store.
And I can relate to that, you know. I mean, I was working at a convenience store for myself for a while, and it's, you know, Clerks was always one of those movies that kind of struck home with me, because I'm like, yeah, I can totally relate.
Yeah, like, people who work in restaurants, you know, like the movie Waiting. Anybody who's worked at a gas station. Yeah, it's Clerks. And it was, like I said, just two buddies hanging out, dealing with bullshit all day, which is pretty much what, you know, our lives were like growing up.
I mean, what do you mean like? I mean, isn't that still the case? I mean, we go through each day, we're still putting up with bullshit, but now we got a podcast that we can actually vent about the bullshit we put up with.
True, true. Yeah, him and his producing partner, Scott Mosier, like I said, this was their, you know, kind of signature piece, and it... At the time, I mean, this was kind of the beginning of, like, the indie film movement. I mean, this movie was, you know, pretty much self-financed. The original movie was made for, like, $27,000. I mean, and that's in a time when, I mean, any kid with a GoPro can make a movie now and put it up on YouTube. This is at a time where you actually had to rent real, you know, cameras.
Yeah, I mean, you had to come up with production space, camera, the equipment, the whole nine yards. Technology, it was not as friendly to get out to the masses or anything of that nature that, you know, I mean, there was no YouTube in 1994.
Yeah, I mean, that's why the achievement of this and have it, you know, selling and becoming a hit was so impressive, because, I mean, nowadays, pretty much everything, you know, he did, we could do with a GoPro and a laptop. And you throw it up on YouTube.
No, because we still wouldn't get the writing. And, I mean, there was a lot that goes into it.
Well, I mean, yeah. Like I said, that, you know, of course, you still have to write something and make it that something good. But as far as the technology of filming the movie, today it's, you know, available. Hell, you could do it with your, you know, good enough cell phone. I mean, every kid nowadays wants to be a filmmaker. I mean, just watch YouTube and you'll see all kind of crazy shit.
No, absolutely. But I think, you know, going back to the simplicity is one of the reasons that Clerks really, you know, set home with so many folks. And it really set the stage, like you said, as far as, you know, introducing additional characters and everything else. And the fact that everyday people could relate to it, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody that's worked, it may not necessarily be a convenience store, but anybody that's worked a 9-to-5's had to deal with, you know, the general populace at some point and the monotony that comes with it at times.
I mean, how many times did, you know, you talk shit about customers, especially if you work in retail?
Never, because I'm a professional.
Yeah, whatever. Freaking liar.
Bullshit, you can't prove it.
But yeah, I mean, it was... Pretty much all of us have had a what we consider a do nothing job at some point, and Clerks really brought that. You know, you could relate to all those characters. You know, Dante, Randall. Yeah, I was probably Dante, and Mike was probably Randall back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, I was more the Dante because I could see, you know, there were a lot of my friends that were just they were content where they were, and they weren't interested in trying to move up corporate ladders or, you know, be corporate kiss asses per se or anything. They were just there to get by, keep groceries in the refrigerator, and, well, a lot of times that was optional. It was more like alcohol or substances or something of that nature.
Hey, man, but alcohol and ramen noodles, that's the important groceries when you're in your 20s.
Absolutely. But, you know, it's those likenesses, like I said, that there's – you could choose any number of those characters, and people from all walks of life at some point can relate.
Yeah, and I said I watched I believe it's on the Clerks 10th anniversary DVD, the Snowball Effect, which is the documentary they did on the making of Clerks and what all they had to – like I said, they would work all day and then pretty much film all night. That's why the shutters are broke in the movie, because they could film at night and still claim it was the daytime. I mean, there's just like – there's so many things they did just out of necessity that, you know, became big parts of the movie. Like I said, that whole, you know, the shutters.
We assure you, we're open.
Yeah. Like, you know, most of that stuff that came out. And that, and if you notice, like, Walt Flanagan is playing, like, I don't know, 7 or 8 different parts in the movie, because they just didn't have, you know, him with a different wig. It's like, just about every character that comes in the store is, like, either Walt Flanagan or one of his other buddies, because they just need people to, like, fill space.
Which I think is awesome. You know, I mean, it's. I don't know. There's a certain elegance about the film. And unfortunately, when it first came out, I really didn't have as much of an appreciation for the film as I do now. You know, just, I guess, the progression of characters and storylines and things of that nature. You know, but it's one of the movies that at least once, I would say every 3 or 4 months, I go back and watch. Like, it's timeless for me.
Yeah. And then the also with the Clerks, and then we'll move on to the rest of them. The title breaks. I mean, there's 9 title breaks in it, which is pretty much like, you know, the main character's name's Dante, and it's kind of a Dante's Inferno, but in a gas station or a
convenience store. And I like the running play. I'm not even supposed to be here today.
Yeah. And as he goes through the levels, shit just keeps getting worse as the movie progresses.
Absolutely.
And in the original cut, he gets killed at the end, but they thought that was too dark of an ending, and also wouldn't allow them to be like a sequel or anything. But yeah, and if you watch the like original director's cut, like, you know, somebody comes in and like robs the store and shoots Dante at the end.
I mean, that's just disappointing.
Yeah,
I hadn't seen that or, you know, read about that before, so I'm just like, yeah, if that would happen, that would just destroy the timeline and all the progression and all the things loved. You know,
if you watch the deleted scenes or like the director's cut. Yeah, it's dark as hell, because like I said, Dante just gets capped, and then like it just like kind of fades to black with the the convenience store like song playing in the background. It's just like all quiet as shit. That freaking, you know, store, you know, audio is going.
I mean, knowing what I know now, if I were to watch that, I would probably in some sort find it semi comical, just knowing that it didn't play out that way. But
no.
You know, had I had seen, you know, the original director's cut. Dude, that would have, a part of me would have been destroyed.
Yeah, because that's definitely I can see why they changed it, but yeah, because it definitely ends on like such a dark note. And you know, indie film back in the day, that was, you know, that was kind of a trademark of indie film, like, oh, we got to go dark.
Which we definitely see that with some of Kevin Smith's other films, which we'll get to later on.
Oh, the Canadian.
Yeah, we'll get there. There's a lot of ground to cover before then.
Yeah. Next up, which, and, you know, the actual timeline is supposed to be a prequel to Clerks, but it was his first, you know, this one right here, he kind of made on his own, and then his next movie, Mallrats, which came out, you know, a year later in 95, was his first studio film, where he actually had a professional studio behind him, and was like, what the fuck do I do with all this stuff? But to me, you know, this, in theaters, it kind of bombed. It didn't, like, make a whole lot of money. But Mallrats blew up on home video.
Yeah, man, this is definitely a cult film.
Yeah, I mean, for a lot of people, this is probably their favorite movie. I mean, I think I might have saw Mallrats before I saw Clerks. And like I said, that was one of those that, you know, it wasn't in the theaters long, but on video, it's like everyone, when you could go home and get drunk and watch this stuff. And like, so that's when people really kind of found the movie.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact that this is a romantic comedy, you know, kind of is a different twist on things from, you know, the folks that I watched everything out of order. So, like, even, it was kind of like Star Wars for me. I watched everything in all the wrong orders until I, you know, went back and was like, wait a second, all the timelines are goofy. Let's don't go by release dates. Let's go by.
Well, thing too, if you watch the, you can watch one movie and not be lost. I mean, they're connected, but they're not sequels. So they're not, you know, too dependent on the other movies. But if you've seen the other movies, you get all these little in jokes and references that he always drops in. Yeah, Mallrats starred Jeremy London, Claire Forlani, Jason Lee, Shannon Doherty. Oh,
come on, man. Ben Affleck?
Yeah, Batfleck. I mean, this is probably one of his early films. And after that, you know, pretty much Kevin put him in every single one of his movies except for his, like, you know, new movie since, you know, Batfleck's too famous now.
But, yeah, I mean... There's so many funny references in this film that
I forget. Ethan Suplee's trying to see the magic eye poster.
Yes.
Why do I get to see the sailboat? And those like freaking random blueprint scenes where Jay and Bob are trying to take down the stage and ruin the show, and the bad shit that keeps happening to him.
I don't know. I always kind of go back to the very uncomfortable place, the whole anal sex reference.
Yes, that is one of my favorite jokes in that movie was the whole, like, you know, he always takes a girl home and tries to have sex with her in an uncomfortable place. What, like the back of a Volkswagen? Every time I see a Volkswagen, I laugh because of that fucking movie.
Oh.
That and Jay and Bob beating up the Easter Bunny.
Oops.
Yes.
And this is one of Jason... Well, I think this might have been Jason Lee's first acting role, really. He was a professional skateboarder before this. And now the dude's like, you know, he's like a legit actor. You know, he's been in a few... I mean, Almost Famous. We were talking about that earlier.
And, yes.
I mean, he's turned into, you know, a great actor. But yeah, it all started here as like the...
The deadbeat druggy, you know, or well,
comic book nerd, like the hardcore like comic book nerd, which pretty much we've, you know, all known or been one in at one time or another.
Once again, that can't be proven. That's still open for debate.
And topless psychics. I've yet topless to find psychic. A topless psychic I can go to, but
you're just not trying hard
enough.
It's
on my bucket list. As Brody says, she can tell me I'm going to die. As long as she does it with her shirt off, I'm cool with it.
Yeah, and well, one of the big things talking about comic books and everything is Brody, when he actually receives advice on romance from Stan Lee.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a huge part of the movie for me.
Yeah, I mean, Stan Lee, this is, he's such a badass in that movie. But, and to go back a second to, you know, we forgot to mention the biggest part of what the big thing that ties all the Askewniverse movies together is Jay and Silent Bob. You know, Jason Mewes as his drug dealer buddy and Kevin Smith as Silent Bob, his silent freaking bodyguard.
Sometimes not so silent. I mean...
Yeah, it's like, he always has like at least one line per movie, and it's always like something just freaking deep.
Yes, and... I mean, very philosophical, and you're like,
all right, we what's the moral of the story here? We got to wait for Bob to weigh in and tell us what we need to learn from this experience.
Like, I think there should be a book, you know, life advice from Bob.
Well, he does have a book written. One of his books he wrote is called Tough Shit. It's, you know, pretty much life advice from Kevin Smith. So,
I mean, pretty close then.
Yeah.
I mean, once again, the guy's did it all, so there's nothing I could say that, hey, this would be a cool idea. No, chances are he's already did it.
And he wasn't even supposed to be, like, originally when he came up with the script for Clerks, he was going to be Randall. That's why Randall has all the best lines in the movie. But he's like, it's too complicated to act and direct. I'm just going to be Bob. Which, yeah, like I said, that was probably worked out for the better because you know, that's been his signature thing for many years.
And that also opened the door for Fat Man and Overcoat jokes.
Yes. As a fat man myself, I have to thank Kevin Smith for that because I've used the... Hey, ladies, you're managing to look like Fat Man in an Overcoat. It's why I started wearing trench coats with Silent Bob. He made it cool.
So I guess in this instance, I'm the Jason Mewes. I'm just, you know, random as hell. Like... Go out with this guy.
And that brings us to our next in the was originally the Jersey trilogy, which expanded into a lot more movies than that. But Chase and Amy in 97, which that one again, you know, now Ben Affleck's a starring man. Jason Lee is back as Banky. Joey Adams as Alyssa. And this one actually, you know, made a decent amount. It was like, I think it made it for $250,000. It brought in $12 million. And again, has, like all his movies, seen a lot more life on video. This is one that, I don't know, every time I watch it, I get depressed.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is you know, this really pulls on the heartstrings of a lot of nerds.
I mean, that's one of the things that makes that movie great is it makes you feel something. And like I said, especially, you know, Holden, he scores, he gets like the perfect girl, but then he just overthinks it and just fucks it all up. And that is definitely, I've done that myself far too many times. And every
just
time
let it come
I,
naturally, man, don't try to force that shit.
Yeah. Every time I see that movie, I'm like, I feel you, Holden.
But I also like the fact too that, you know, this also did introduce the Blunt Man and Chronic comic, so
yes,
could be two of my favorite superheroes just because it's so random, it's so haphazard, but it works.
And that brought us to his next film, Dogma. I mean, anybody who has, I don't know, been into religion, this movie is just is people who has questioned religion, this is the movie for you. This is the first one where, you know, Jay and Bob are more than just the random character shows up. They played a big part in this, and this is also one of his first, you know, I'd say big budget movies that you know, had other than he had, like, you know, big name stars. I mean, at this point, I think Affleck and Matt Damon had already won an Oscar.
And, I mean, not only that, but the fact that you had Alanis Morissette playing God. I mean,
Canadian God. Yeah, Alan Rickman, you know, as we've talked about from Die Hard, Chris Rock, freaking George Carlin is Cardinal Glick.
Yeah, and you see Carlin make a couple of appearances, and dude, I was truly saddened when that guy passed because a lot of my life philosophies have been based on some George Carlin antics. I mean, raw, uncut, and in your face, guy was a god.
Oh yeah, and like I said, and him as Cardinal Glick too in this movie, and then Affleck and Damon as the weird, you know, fallen angels. Especially when Damon is the god of death who just goes in and wastes all those, like, executives at that,
that
movies thing. And Affleck's whole speech, because he's the one who's supposed to judge everybody, and just goes through, like, you know, telling everybody their sins and shit. I love that speech. And then, like I said, and freaking Jason Lee again as the demon Azrael.
Yes. I mean, this movie was so awesome. I mean, because, you know, Matt and Ben, they give each other shit throughout the movie and stuff. You see that later on in some of the other films, too. And they make a great duo, you know, with Kevin Smith's writing.
You want a holy bartender? And, you know, this movie also had a 6-foot, you know, shit demon.
Which...
I don't know how many times I'm like, I'm going to the bathroom, I'm going to summon the Golgothan. I was like, what's a Golgothan? It's a shit demon!
What's worse than the Chupacabra? Golgothan.
Yeah, true that.
But yeah, this movie, I mean, once again, it's another classic. I mean, it's probably one of the movies that I more frequently watch just for the sheer fact that the humor and the puns and the fact that they're, you know, looking for a loophole in Catholicism and stuff like that really, I don't know, like, too bad Garfunkel and Oates wasn't around, you know, for this film.
Yes. The golden rule.
And we'll leave it at that because I think I nearly got us banned the last time I tried to make a Garfunkel and Oates reference.
Oh, and then we had, you know, kind of kept, you know, I think this was intended to be the last of the Askewniverse movies, was Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back. That was kind of Kevin's, like, thank you to all his fans. He's like, you've wanted a Jay and Bob movie. Here's your Jay and Bob movie. Don't hate me for it. This is what you people wanted. And I think it was chock full of so many references to all the other movies. There's cameos from pretty much everybody who has ever been in a Kevin Smith movie. I mean, even Carlin was back as the hitchhiker who taught them the
giving life advice. Yes. By the book. And unfortunately, you know, Carlin's book is not the same book as the nun that they happen to get in the car with.
Which, pretty much all these movies, too, you're guaranteed to get. Not only is Jay and Bob, you know, in every one of them, there's always Star Wars and Jaws references. Those are the things that will pop up in every movie. I mean, Clerks, we had the argument about the Death Star. I mean, there was a bunch of them in freaking, you know, Bob kept trying to use the Force and Mallrats. Chase and Amy. Fuck, I don't remember, but I know there's some in there, you know. And
yeah, I mean the freaking lightsaber battles in Jay and Silent Bob.
Yeah,
and
Jay and Silent Bob.
Yeah, I'm sure we're gonna get sued for this.
And like you go back to Chase and Amy, that argument they're having in the bar where they start Banky and Alyssa start comparing sex injuries. And even it looks like the table they're all sitting around in Jaws when they're like all comparing injuries and stuff. I mean, there's even if it's not like just a blatant reference, there's either Star Wars, Jaws, or both in every single freaking movie. Salsa shark.
Salsa shark. Oh man, there's just so much goodness to this film. I mean. All right, I'm just going to go ahead and throw it out there. You know, I am the Click Commander. I make that shit work. I mean, that is a classic.
You mean the Coalition to Liberate and Itinerant Tree Dwellers?
Yes.
Which is an offshoot of the Labia, the Liberate Apes Before Imprisoning Apes movement.
I mean, just the puns. And that's a pun that we see in other films as well, you know, related to the...
And Will Farrow as Marshall Will and Holly. The worst freaking whatever animal control guy.
Animal
ever.
Marshal control, yeah. It's
like when he freaking kicks in the door and blows movies away with the freaking Barney looking dude with the shotgun.
Yeah, it's like, oh, is he hurt?
He's freaking old, like all the way through him. And Mark Hamill as cock knocker.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Dude, that movie's so freaking.
And then he, you know, said he kind of went away from that for a while, but then he came back with, you know, Clerks 2, which, you know, which is to me is almost as good as the original, if not better. I mean, his skill as a filmmaker had improved so much that I mean, it
Clerks
looks
2, you
awesome.
Definitely had a lot more over the top antics. You know, it wasn't nearly as
and the way it started off
humored.
Black and white as the original did, and then cuts to color, and then it ends. Back to the black and white, where they're back at the store, everything's right with the world. we're back to normal, except now that they own the store. And like I said, the freaking donkey show too. I mean, they you know, introduced a few new characters. You got Rosario Dawson's character as Dante's love interest, and the weird Jesus kid Elias, which I've known way too many kids like that.
Yes. Yeah, I mean. Speaking of that, this movie has probably one of my favorite, you know, competitions. You know, there's always that battle between, you know, the Lord of the Ring trilogy, the Star Wars
I've
movies.
Yes, I've had those conversations.
You know,
with my freaking buddies that are into Lord of the Rings, I'm like, fuck you, Star Wars is better.
But I just love the fact that it's, oh, here's the first movie. It's somebody walking, and oh, we're gonna drop the ring. Oh, here's the second movie. Yep, we're still walking. And we get the third movie. Even the fucking trees are walking. So just you know, I'm a Lord of the Rings fan, but I also like Star Wars too. So I'm like, I can see both sides of the aisle, and it's funny no matter how you play it out.
Hobbits suck. That's all I'm going to say. Yeah, I love the character of Elias in this movie and the stuff they did to him.
Oh, yeah. I love the... The reference, you know, when Elias is talking about his girlfriend to, you know, freaking Randall. And it's like, so have you kissed her? No, she has this mouth troll named Lister Fiend. And, you know, well, have you, I forgot, you know, had sex with her or something like that. It's like, no, she has a, what the hell, some kind of troll or something like that. And it, just the exchange there is absolutely humorous. Yes.
Oh, because like I said, I've known too many kids like that. Being in the South,
yeah. What are you talking about, dude? Who were the kids like that?
Not me. I was never the religious kid. But you're living in the South. I've met way too many Eliases. In fact, Zach and Mary Make a Porno. The whole like Dutch Rudder thing. I got one of my buddies. He was the freaking Elias kid. And we were talking about something one day. He's like, yeah, I like simple pleasures. And I'm like, I like more complex pleasures, like a Dutch Rudder. And he's like, what's a Dutch Rudder? So I had to explain it to him, and you could see his mind melt. He's like, people do that?
Just the mortification on people's faces. Yes. Like, yeah, I mean, you know, because that was awesome back in the days before we had Urban Dictionary.
Yeah, because he was such a sheltered kid that, like, you could make weird jokes that he wouldn't get. So it was, I was like, as soon as I said it, I'm like, oh, I've got you now. You're about to learn something you don't want to know.
I'm about to drop that knowledge you can't unlearn.
Well, like I said, let's, and of course, we're getting a Clerks 3 that's going to be, you know, kind of wrapping up that trilogy. And also Mallrats 2 coming out at some point. I don't have any kind of release date on that, but you know, he's pretty much gotten everyone who was in the first one has committed to coming back, except for, I don't know if Affleck is signed on yet, but there was a whole series on Twitter where he kept, you know, posting pictures of different people in the movie holding up, like, the two, like, he's like, I've got him back.
Yeah.
I forgot to talk about in Mallrats, freaking Walking Dead's, freaking Michael Rooker, I mean, as, you know, Jared Schwinning,
yes,
kind of the bad guy. And this is where we got the stink palm, which is one of the greatest inventions ever. I mean, it's I've used the stink palm on more than one occasion because it's the best way to get back at somebody when you can't like just be at, you know, straight up to their face, you know, fuck you.
And the bad thing about it is after you do it, you feel the need to call me and be like, dude, I just accomplished another stink palm. I'm glad I'm not one of the unfortunate few.
That you know of.
There's a reason our hands don't touch.
Yeah, now when I meet people in public, they're always going to fist bump me. No one's going to want to shake my hands at events. I promise, folks, it's only used in special occasions when someone really, really deserves it. It's not an everyday thing.
Feel bad for that insurance claim adjuster. Should have thought twice before denying that one.
But like I said, and then he's kind of moved out of the Askewniverse and made some outside movies. And that's going to get kind of into one of the things I want to talk about, which is his contribution to independent filmmaking. He's kind of gone back to that, to his original roots. He made Jersey Girl, which I've seen it. And it's a good movie. I mean, it kind of bombed because it came out at a bad time when everyone was kind of sick of freaking J-Lo. But, and I don't have kids, but as a family person, it definitely is one of those films to speak to someone who is a father. I think, and George Carlin playing the grandfather too is, I mean, you wanted Carlin to be your dad. I mean,
yeah, no, I mean, I don't know, man. Like I said, I could probably do an entire segment on George Carlin alone, just the influence that guy has had over, you know, the many, many years that I've delved into the George Carlin philosophies.
And even, like, you know, Affleck was excellent in this movie. You know, as the difficulty of being a single father, he was like bigwig executive. Kind of like an agent or something like that, and he just blew up at freaking Will Smith, and then got banned, and it was forced to become a work for this, you know, whatever city, and you know, became like a civil servant and stuff, and just, you know, had to eventually learn to be happy with what he had and not try to get back into the whole Hollywood thing. You know, he realized
it's the simple pleasures in life.
you know, he didn't realize that, you know, he had everything he needed, and you know, through the course of the movie, he eventually, like, you know, comes to accept his life and enjoy it. And the kids' play of what's that movie that had Johnny Depp in the musical?
Oh, damn it.
Yeah, you Google that while I'm talking. But yeah, this is way before that movie actually came out. The girl had to do a talent show, and they decided to do one of the bloodiest scenes from that play for a bunch of kids. There's like blood shooting everywhere, and it's absolutely hysterical them doing that.
There's a couple that come to mind. Sweeney Todd was one.
Yeah, Sweeney Todd. That's the play they decided to put on for children.
I don't know. For some reason, Repo the Genetic Opera was trying to come into my head, and I was like, wait a second. That's not it at all.
We made that, and then he went and did Zach and Mary Make a Porno, which that movie was as funny as, you know, some of his earlier. So I think Zach and Mary is hilarious. And, you know, Seth Rogen.
Elizabeth Banks.
J-Muse, as we said, were the, you know, the inventor of the Dutch rudder line in the movie.
Yeah, this was one movie. The first time I watched it, this movie took a little bit to grow on me. But, you know, after seeing it a few times, it's up there for me.
Yeah, and that's, I was definitely sold from the jump. Yeah, I always liked Seth Rogen, and this was like one of the first, other than Jersey Girl, non Jay and Bob movies that Kevin did. You know, but had Jay in it as Chester the Molester.
So, could you classify this as a coming of age film? Maybe not coming of age, but maybe relationship progression or something.
Yeah, it's definitely a romantic comedy where, like, you know, two friends find love by trying to make a porno.
It's like, we're going to do this, no feelings attached, and, like, I don't think it
and
works
Star
that
Wars.
Way.
Was Star Wars. Star Wars to begin with, and then when they lost all their stuff, they tried to, you know, again, pretty much did the porn version of what Kevin did was, you know, make a movie based on what you have access to. They have access to a coffee shop, so that becomes the set of their porno, and has real porno actors. You get Tracy Lords and what's her name? The main blonde girl that Katie Morgan. Yeah, she who ended up crapping on Randall.
Oops. Sometimes shit goes south.
And that scene in the movie, too, the audience reaction on that, because it was so, like, out of nowhere. Freaking everybody's like, oh, shit. I think I laughed so hard people turned around and looked at me, because I was like, that cracked, you know,
well, not
poop humor as just gets the 12-year-old in all of us.
Especially you. And you have a unique laugh, too. So, like, people, like, instantly is like, I could hear you, like, in a crowd. I'd be like, yep, that's definitely Joe.
On the Fury Road.
That's for later. That's a whole other segment.
But then after that, you know, he got into his, the beginning of his horror, horror obsession, which this is one of the things that I really enjoyed about this kind of later half of his career. As he's gone back to that indie spirit that he had to begin with. I mean, when Red State came out, originally, you know, like I said, it was kind of, you know, financed with investors and stuff like that. And he's like, I'm going to show this at Sundance and I'm going to auction it off, you know, to whoever wants to distribute it. And then he gets up there and he's like, nope, I'm going to distribute it myself and do this as a truly independent film. I'm not going to spend a bunch of money advertising it. I'm not going to, you get all this corporate involvement. I'm doing this on my own. I'm releasing it on my own.
Yeah, I mean, this was done under the Smodcast Pictures, correct?
Yeah, I think so. But yeah, he took it on, instead of releasing like in big theaters, he took it on like a road show. And I actually saw it on my birthday when it came to Atlanta, and they would, you know, play the movie, and then afterward he'd do like an hour Q&A or whatnot. And that movie was so, I mean, people who had only seen his comedy work, that movie was so dark, but still had, like, these hilarious points. I mean, there's parts where it's just so serious that, like, nobody's making a sound in the theater because everyone's like, holy shit,
yeah,
what's about to happen?
Drop. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, one of the bad guys gets wasted and everyone like cheers and stuff. I was watching, because Kev was actually in the audience live tweeting the movie as like people were, right? So like looking at his like Twitter feed afterward, like the one part where like one of the main bad guys get killed and everybody starts cheering. He's like, damn, Atlanta's a bloodthirsty crowd.
I mean, that's because just about everybody in here, not the city of Atlanta, but the state of Georgia, guns are very popular.
But it was so brilliant because it was like these, where tension would just build and build and build, and then something like that would happen just to break the tension.
Yeah, I mean, there was an awesome comic relief.
Yeah. And it just had that, build, ah, relief.
It wasn't like you were on the edge of your seat the entire time, but
some of those movies like that where it's just, you know, tension through the whole movie, you're freaking exhausted afterward. You don't really, it's almost an endurance test.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this one had enough, you know, breaks that it was, you know, it kept you going. And Michael Parks in the movie too is just brilliant as the head preacher guy of this weird cult that's, I mean, the whole thing is they lure sinners in by posting like sex ads on these like porn sites. when the sinners come in, they end up killing them all. And, you know, it was kind of a fictional version of the like Westboro Baptist Church.
Wow, I didn't think we'd ever reference those guys.
Hey, maybe we'll get protested or something.
We're gonna have our one fan sit there with a picket sign.
Feel free to protest me. I think it's hilarious.
Yes. We will indulge the opportunity.
But then continue with this whole, you know, resurgence of independent movies. He was going to be retired. He's like, I'm done. Yeah, Clerks 2 is going to be my last movie. I'm wrapping it up. I'm just going to go back. I'm just going to do, you know, podcasts and live shows, whatnot, the stuff that he's kind of big into now. But then, yeah, since then, he did Tusk, which we've talked about before, and now he's got a whole Canadian horror trilogy planned, and Clerks 2, Mallrats. I mean, the dude, he's kind of had a, you know, he's like,
dude, he's got such a following now that the fans just aren't going to let the characters die out. I mean,
well, that, and you know, he was kind of worn out on it too. He's like, yeah, I wanted to be a filmmaker. I was a filmmaker. I want to do something else now. But then he, you know, got to the point where, like I said, and we'll talk about his contribution to podcasting in a minute, but you know, Tusk really came out of a podcast. I mean, you know, they read some kind of weird article on like a not Craigslist, but something like that, where someone was like, you know, I want somebody to move into my house. And the rule is you got to dress like a walrus for so many hours a day and only be a walrus. And they're like, came up with this whole idea, stoned, about a horror movie.
Isn't that when the best ideas are born?
And it was like, you know what? This is such a fucked up idea that it has to happen. If you tweet me, Walrus, yes, I'm making the movie. If I get enough tweets say Walrus, no, I'm going to realize it was just a stoned idea. I'm not going to do it. And the response was like, oh, so literally, the podcast created the movie, and then his Twitter following got the movie made. And like I said, that's one thing I've always loved about Kevin Smith is his, you know, connection to his audience.
Yes, I mean he definitely engages his fans.
Yeah, I mean I've tweeted stuff and have him like, you know, retweet it and stuff like that. He's been one who's always, you know, open to connecting with his audience. He, you know, most celebrities and stuff, you're like, oh, that dude's on a whole another level. He's not gonna pay attention to me. But I mean, he is like, I mean, when I went to that live show of Red State, there was one guy came up to like ask a question. It was just this dude was like super nervous. And Kevin actually got off the stage, like, came out of the audience and held the dude's hand while he asked his question. Like, it's okay, buddy. I've got you. Yeah. What do you want to know?
What you don't realize is secretly you've been stink palmed.
Oh. And like I said, we saw Tusk, and Tusk was just, I mean, we actually went to see it in the theaters. I still need to add it to my Blu-ray collection.
Yeah, and we weren't, you know, we were, what, maybe 3-4 episodes into our podcast at that point?
Yeah, it was very early in the podcast, and this is like, dude, we can't do a show in Canada now. Because I mean, not only...
If you do, we're just not going to, you know, go to a bar and find some weird ad and be like, all right, I'm going to go check out this dude's house.
And not only is, like I said, that movie and the rest of the movies born out of stuff from the podcast, while how the Askewniverse was all interconnected, these movies are all interconnected because... But instead of referencing other movies, they all reference the podcasts. I mean, if you listen to all his podcasts, I could sit there and be like, oh, yeah, that's a reference to Hollywood Babylon. That's a reference to Tell 'Em Steve Dave. I mean, there's all these little drops for people that are that are fans of the podcast.
That's what ultimately led up to, the creation of Yoga Hosers and the Tusk and,
yeah,
you know.
And Moose Jaws. I mean, that's all from stuff that came out of Smodcast. And these movies are so different from the stuff he's done before. I'm glad the dude has kind of, you know, reinvented himself. But since we're talking about these movies being born out of the podcast, let's talk a little bit about how important he is to the podcasting world. I mean, he is literally the podfather. He may not have been one of the, you know, original podcasters, but he definitely was there in, like, you know, an early adopter of it. I think Smodcast is probably the first podcast that I listened to, and that was back before I even knew what iTunes was. I mean, this is when we would actually go to his
You and I would listen to
to it on the website when they posted
stuff together all the time. I mean, ultimately, dude, the Cigar Nerds were born out of, you know, hey, this is a cool concept and a cool idea, and hey, this is a way we can get out there, express some of our views, ideas, and likenesses folks. And
this podcast literally would not exist if it wasn't for Kevin Smith, because, you know, back in the day when he's like, you want to make a film, you know, just go make a film. You know, I've done it. You know, you can do it too. But that shit still costs money. And nowadays he's like, if you have something you want to do, something out there, you want to do a podcast. I mean, it's simple. It's, you know, we've spent a little money, but not like freaking movie money on this. It's something pretty much anybody can do if you have a story to tell and
I
something
don't know, dude,
entertaining.
We've been through a lot of cigars and beer.
I'm trying not to just count that in the in the budget.
I have to.
But still, I mean, it's like I said, it's an easy way to create something that if you have something you want to get out into the world. Podcasting is, you know, there's no barrier to entry. Anyone who has a computer and a microphone can make a podcast.
I mean, hell, you don't even need a mic. I mean, if
it may
got
not
a
be
web
interesting,
camp, yeah,
but anybody can make a podcast.
I mean, look at us.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was definitely one of the original podcasters. And then nowadays, every celebrity you come across has a podcast or something. And then also, he's like one of the first few people I remember doing live shows. I mean, now, you know, like I said, people will actually pay tickets and go to see a podcast.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we're prime examples. Well, you know, one of the most recent ones we went and saw was Chris Hardwick, you know.
Yeah, when they did the Nerdist podcast tour. And I went to see, when Jay and Silent Bob Super Groovy cartoon movie came out, they did that like as a double feature. You'd come watch the movie, and then they would do a live version of Jay and Silent Bob Strikes, or Jay and Silent Bob Get Old. And it, like I said, like, so now it's not like, you know, that was kind of the original thing, was a lot of these comedians stuff that have podcasts was like, well, the podcast is a way to get people out to the live shows that have nothing to do with the podcast, but you like what I said on the podcast, you'll like my stand up. But now the podcast itself is an attraction. People
yes.
will go to see them
well,
record
I mean,
a
it
podcast.
Was, you know, I almost attribute it, we've talked about this before, about like the Grindhouse films where they're,
yeah.
you know, oh, these are going to be fake trailers, but there was such a demand from the audience and stuff that you're just like, that has to come to fruition. That has to be a movie.
And the dude, like I said, he started off with just Smodcast, and now he's built up a whole podcast network. I mean, before that, you know, I'd heard podcasts, but didn't see people having like a huge network, like, you know, the Nerdist Network, freaking Podwolf or whatever, Earwolf Network. I mean, the ESO network that we're on. I mean, you didn't really see these, you know, collections of shows. And hell, Kevin, I mean, we struggle doing one every 2 weeks. Dude does like 5 podcasts a week. He's a freaking podcasting machine.
We're just not that creative.
No, we still have day jobs. If we didn't
that's
have
my
day
excuse.
Jobs,
that's
maybe we would be able to podcast more. But yeah, I mean,
that's it. We just one of us has got to hit the lottery, and then we can just go full time podcast production.
I keep trying, but I keep losing. But yeah, I mean the whole and even like I said the the sheer amount of podcasts he does, and they're all different. I mean, you got Smodcast, the original, Jay and Silent Bob Get Old, which is he calls it an intervention podcast, where it's just, you know, Jay needed something to do when he was getting sober, and this was, instead of going to meetings, this was somewhere he could sit down and tell funny stories about bad shit he got into when he was on drugs, and also, you know, don't do the story.
Is the one where they where they're in Australia and they actually film, you know, the
Jay and Bob down under.
Is that still on Netflix? I know it was there for a while, but
it might be. I think one of them's on there. I'm not sure.
Because that was kind of cool, you know, actually seeing, you know, them in person, you know, interacting, and, you know, you kind of got to see some of the struggles, but then again, you got to see, you know, that side of Kevin where he's like, look, dude, I'm your friend. I'm here to lend a hand, blah, 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 whatever it takes.
Yeah, and I'm also going to make fun of you.
Yeah, I mean, and you're going to keep it 100 at the same time.
Yeah, which, like I said, and that's one thing I love about that show is just him and his buddy sitting down having a freaking conversation. You know, both the Smodcast and Jay and Bob show. It's, you know, just him and his buddies. It was a way for them to sit down and catch up, you know, on a weekly, biweekly, monthly basis, which is pretty much the reason why we freaking started this show. And then Hollywood Babylon is one of the funnier ones too, with him and Ralph Garman, who is like a master of voices, and some of the random shit they talk about on that show is, it's kind of a entertainment news type show, but some of the stuff they they talk about, the weird songs they do, and just the random shit is absolutely hysterical. And freaking they end every show with the series of Liam Neeson dick jokes. Which is kind of like the Chuck Norris Legends, but it has to do with Liam Neeson's Dugan, which was funny because I dated a girl whose son was named Liam, and I used to laugh every time because I would always think of, I made her listen to Hollywood Babylon one day, and she's like, dude, I can't look at him now.
I will never see my brother in the same light ever again.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, this whole new series of movies is kind of born out of this, you know, podcast thing. He's definitely inspired me and like many other people's to get into podcasting.
I mean, get out there, express yourself, and hey, you know, there's an audience for everyone. Just got to find that niche.
And
I see the gears turning. I was just waiting on the thought to come to completion there.
Come to completion. But yeah, I mean, podcasting itself is you know, an art form into itself. Because like I said, I need something creative to do. I can't draw. And I can't build stuff. But I can talk shit for an hour.
Yeah, I mean, well, we did, you know, coming into the podcast and everything else, we did exactly what we said. We're having these nerdy ass conversations anyway. I mean, it's a great way. I mean, you and I, since we've started doing the podcast and stuff, we've connected so much more, you know, just, you know, hanging out, keeping up, you know, with what's going on. And it's also an awesome break from the monotony of our, you know, freaking day jobs and everything else. So you can actually come unload, vent, talk about just randomness, have fun, and
and like another thing that's been born out of these podcasts is, have you watched the Comic Book Man TV series?
Yes.
I mean, that's pretty much a direct came from the Tell 'Em Steve Dave podcast. You know, all those guys that work at, you know, like I said, that's why I say Kevin Smith's my spirit animal. Podcaster, makes movie, dude, own the comic book store too, and you know the crew that runs the comic book store, you know, they're now the stars of Comic Book Man. You know, they all have their own podcast. You know, there's Tell 'Em Steve Dave and I Sell Comics and stuff with the, but yeah, the original Tell 'Em Steve Dave with Walt, Brian Quinn, and Brian Johnson. They, like I said, those shows, the theme around the show is, yeah, they're having a podcast with Kevin, and he's like, so what happened at the store this week? And then they show kind of what happened at the store this week and kind of jump back and forth to them telling the story and talking about it on the podcast to the stuff actually happening. And for, you know, anyone who's not done a podcast, that's kind of a cool window on it. But the other thing that cracks me up about that show, if you go back and watch like season one, those guys, because like I said, I listen to that podcast, and those guys pretty much use the same equipment we do. And they record the show on a Zoom, and I think, and then that first season, I mean, they record around a freaking poker table that's in the, actually in the comic book store. But on the show, they're in this nice studio with a nice brand new poker table they're doing. But in the, with a freaking whole mixing board and like, you know, it's like a weird studio. But I'm like, yeah, that's bullshit. That's not how they really record podcasts.
Well, I mean, that was one of the things, you know, when you and I were looking to get into the podcasting and, you know, hey, what equipment are we going to need? What kind of setups are people using? Blah, blah, blah. I mean, that was one of the reference points that we used. And
but
we're
if, you
like,
go, if you go back to season one, they're even using the same mic stands we do. But, you know, you don't realize that these mic stands don't make for good visual for TV because you got these big pop filters on them. And so you're looking at people hiding behind these microphones. So, you know, after season one, the next season, they got these, like, these little small tripod mics that they're probably not even hooked up. They're just there for props for the for the filming of the show. But yeah, the first season
mics all around that you don't see.
Yeah, the first season it tried to look like it actually looks when they record the podcast, and they're like, yeah, that doesn't make for good TV. So we gotta change things. But yeah, it's the exact same mic stands.
I'm just gonna, you know, before we get into video podcasts and stuff, I need a heads up, and you know, probably 20-30 grand because I'm gonna need a makeover or something.
Yeah, I need to lose like 100 pounds. I have a face for radio. So what's your, you know, the highlights for you of, you know, movies, podcasts?
I mean, I think the biggest thing for me, once again, is, you know, especially in talking about Clerks and Mallrats, Jay and Silent Bob, Dogma, the fact that I'm able to relate and I can, you know, connect with so many of the individual characters and... You know, that entire play for me is one of the things that really attracts and draws my, you know, attention, holds my captivation. And then, like you said, talking about Comic Book Man, and especially like you said in the first season where it is about podcasting and seeing, you know, the different ideas, the gears turning, the creativity inspires me to in turn be creative. It also too, you know, with some of the running jokes and puns and everything. I use a lot of that, you know, when somebody does something off the cuff or says something stupid, and I'll make a reference to a movie I know they haven't seen, and they're like, holy crap, did you think of that? No, this is where it's from, and I'm able to introduce that person. They're like,
"Yeah,
whoa, there's this wealth of movies out there that I would have never tapped into otherwise." And for me, that's part of the fun.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, the thing that's always made me love the Kevin Smith movies was the realism of it. I mean, these people are getting ridiculous situations, but you can imagine yourself in those roles. I mean, the characters are very human, especially the original Clerks. I mean, like I said, I've been Dante, or hell, I've been Holden and Chase and Amy. Like I said, I really, you know, I don't look as good as Ben Affleck, but I've been in those situations. And yeah, you know, also freaking, you know, being a, you know, a fat man. Yeah, Kev's always done, like, you know, accomplished great things, and yeah, I'm like, yeah.
Well, I mean, you also see tribulations, you know. I mean, what was it? The big debate with the airline, because they wanted to charge him for, you know, two seats and stuff like that due to his weight and everything, and you know, him coming out there putting him on blast, and you know, the support from the fans rallying behind him,
I mean,
and everything.
The dude has definitely the power of Twitter behind him. I mean, he could definitely you know, call people to a cause. And he's also been very proactive in things too. I mean, his female characters in her movie, he's big, you know, pro women, pro gay rights. I mean, he puts stuff out there in a way you can understand him without like having to like get preachy with you.
Absolutely. I mean, and you know, that's another thing, you know, Kevin being from New Jersey, and he keeps his home roots all throughout the films and things like that. And that's another thing that I think is awesome. There's not too many folks out there that are, you know, taking their hometown roots to that kind of level with that kind of support, you know, whether it be, you know, sporting events, political views, whatever the case is. You know, that for me is another reason why I really have mad respect for Kevin.
Even with the amount of, you know, success, notoriety he has gotten, he's never shied away from being that, you know, small town guy. He's been maintained true to his roots and true to the fans that, you know, that has supported him all these years. Like I said, he's a dude that you can tweet at, and he'll actually respond if it's something that he thinks like I said, having somebody like a celebrity like I'll make some dumbass comment and dude actually freaking favored it and retweeted it. I'm like,
yeah,
it just it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that sets the precedent for other folks. I mean, Will Wheaton, I would say, is another one of those people that a lot of times you can tweet at him and stuff like that, and he'll kind of give the low man on the totem pole a shout. You may not have 50,000 followers and a huge financial backing, but he'll be like, hey, shout out to this person. Awesome comment. And then he'll work that into a show or something. And Kevin does very much those same things. So
yeah, I mean, I've literally seen people like, tweet at him or email him stuff. And then him like, oh, this is cool. You should come work for me. I mean, there's been people that have seen him, send him stuff on like some of his podcasts. And he's like, oh, this is awesome. Y'all should definitely talk to these people, or hell, we got, something you can do. For example, the Super Groovy cartoon movie. Those Smodcast cartoons started off as something that, some dude sent them that was animating certain episodes of Smodcast. And eventually that dude, did all the animation for that cartoon and even directed that movie. So, I mean, he, when he finds someone who has something that he enjoys to say, it's something creative, he's always open arm trying to bring them into the fold.
Yeah, I mean, he fuels that creative energy out of folks. And I don't know. That's something I wish that I could be better at, but that's one thing that really makes, him such a great guy and everything of that nature is, like I said, there's really no bridge.
Yeah, I mean, he's always the first person not to, say, oh, that's too difficult. He's like, if you want to make something, go make it. There's no one saying that you don't have to wait for someone to give you permission to do a thing. If you want to do a thing, freaking go do a thing. I mean, if there's something you're passionate about,
you just
got to
take that initiative
make
and
happen.
Make it happen.
Yeah.
Holy crap, that was weird. We're like completing each other's sentences, and there was some weird vibe there.
We've been in this basement far too long. All right, and with that, I think we'll wrap it up and be right back with some Beer 30.
Stay tuned.
Oh, I'm the geek? Look at you two whipping out your preciouses.
You'll have to excuse him. He's not down with the trilogy.
Oh, what the fuck happened to this world?
There's only one trilogy, you fucking morons.
You know what? Maybe we should start calling your friend Padme, because he loves Mannequin Skywalker so much, right?
Danger, danger. My name is Anakin. My shitty acting is ruining Saga.
Yeah, you're crazy, Jar Jar.
Oh, I'm crazy? Those fucking Hobbit movies were boring as hell. All it was a bunch of people walking. Three movies of people walking to a fucking volcano. Here's the first movie. And here's the second movie.
He is way off, loser.
You ready for the third movie?
Fucking A.
Even the fucking trees walked in those movies.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back. It's time for some Beer 30.
Yeah, what are we drinking today, Joe?
I forgot. No, it's Terrapin's Liquid Bliss Chocolate Peanut Butter Porter.
Better yet, it's a Reese's Peanut Butter Cup in a glass. I mean, that I think that's the best way I can describe this brew, because I, as much as I was like, damn it, I don't want to like this, now I've fallen in love with it.
Yeah, I mean, especially because of who recommended it. I was like, no way, this... No, I'm not going to give you the satisfaction. I'm like, no, I'm not even going to try it. And then we went to Battle and Brew last weekend for their Star Wars party, and yeah, I decided to try one there. And I mean, it's because normally I'm like, I try to stay away from like what I would call novelty beers. I'm like, oh, it tastes like peanut butter cups, whatever. And I'm like, fuck, this does taste like Reese's peanut butter cups.
Yeah, I mean, it's damn good. I mean, the ABV on this is only 6%, so I mean, it's something you could sit around and enjoy a few of without absolutely getting tanked. So, for our palates anyway, this is actually, probably on the lighter side of, ABVs for us. But No, this is made with a two-rope hell malt, wheat, crystal 86 malts, crystal 120 malts, chocolate wheat, and then some other olive and Sinclair coca nibs, essence of peanut butter. The cool thing is this is by Terrapin Brewery, so shout out to the local guys. I mean,
yeah, these what are Athens-based brewery.
Yes, it's one place that I've really been tempted to go up, and every time I go to Athens, I'm like, oh, I'm gonna go do a tour, and I always get sidetracked and never make it. Yeah. And then when I'm leaving Athens, I'm like, oh, I should go do a tour. I'll put that on the agenda for another weekend, and it for some reason never comes to fruition.
Yeah, I mean, this right here would be a like an excellent dessert beer. Yeah, if you don't want to have a pie at the end of your meal, you order you a Liquid Bliss and get your chocolate fix.
Well, one of the cool things I like about, you know, looking at Terrapin's website is actually on this one, you know, they said, you know, this would be great to pair with a meal of sesame peanut butter noodles and ginger glazed pork ribs. Our experiment with a raspberry torte, pairing it for dessert. So, I mean, I think this is another prime example, because what I had at Battle and Brew is not the beer I'm drinking now.
Well, it's, I mean, this is the difference of, you know, we're drinking the bottled version, and there we had the draft. I mean, you always get like a, because your draft's going to be more aerated than your bottled beer. And so, so there's always, you know, a difference between, you know, what you, if you're, you know, getting the bottled version or if you're able to, you know, try it in a bar somewhere. So, but I mean, I thought, you know, both of them were good. So,
yeah, like, and you know, it might have been the fact too that it took me 45 minutes to get my drink. That might have killed the experience for me.
Or it could have been like the shot of bourbon and the other stout I had before trying this.
I mean,
one.
There's some other factors. Yes, you're right. I mean,
the force was with me that day. That's all I'm gonna say.
The force was with us all. Big shout out to Battle and Brew. That was a fun event, even though they were a little bit ill prepared for the number of folks that turned out for it. But
yeah. I didn't realize how many Star Wars nerds they are in the Metro Atlanta area, because they had like two bartenders working and they were like working their ass off. So I'm like, I can't fault them too much for like taking too long, because there was just a huge number of people there.
Yes.
And like one of the owners was like, yeah, we expected like 40 people to show up, not to like be at capacity.
Yeah. In fact, you know, the only reason we were able to get in is we walked in, there were three people leaving. So, you know, we were able to scoot by, and I think we were the last they let in up until about midnight when folks actually started leaving. So very cool venue, by the way, if you haven't been on there. I would encourage everybody to go and check it out. One of the more geeky, awesome hangouts that I found that's luckily only about 30 minutes from home. So
yeah, we definitely have to go back when it's not so busy, because I mean, we didn't even get a chance to play games. We just like hung out and talked to, you know, a bunch of our nerdy friends that were there. But definitely want to go back when we can actually sit down. And I mean, they had a huge game selection and a lot of, you know, a lot of TVs, and they had tabletop games, computer games, even all the way back to old Nintendo games. You know, everything from the newest stuff to come out all the way to like, so, you know, a selection of original NES games you could check out and play. So definitely going to make a trip back down there.
Absolutely. I mean, I think I'm at about a 4.5 on my untapped scale. What are you rating, Joe?
Yeah, I'd say a 4 and 4.5 as well, because I mean it's not something I would want to make a regular drink out of, but yeah, it's definitely a nice little treat dessert beer to have.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I'm really curious to try it with some of the pairings recommended from the website. You know, such as sesame peanut noodles, ginger glazed pork ribs, or for dessert, the raspberry torte.
Yeah, I definitely think this would make a good like dessert beer. You know, like an after meal thing.
Absolutely, that's kind of the direction I'm leaning. Any other final thoughts or anything on the beer, Joe?
No, just weird drinking Reese's peanut butter cups.
But it works.
Yeah, I mean it was an interesting beer. And with that, we'll be back with science.
Stay tuned.
And we're back with science. Are we ready to learn some shit, Brad?
Absolutely. We got on the agenda. Damn it, Joe. That's another segment altogether.
I'll explain that reference when we get to it. Oh, yeah. Are you a fan of swords and samurai shit in general?
I mean, do you see all the knives and shit down here? Yes.
Well, one thing that that has came out that I thought was freaking awesome when I saw it, and I want one, is there is actually a meteorite sword.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's actually called the... I don't know, it's all in Japanese, but the translation is to the Sky Sword, so it's like a real-life, you know, lightsaber, apparently.
Lightsaber? Lightsaber.
Yeah, it's on display in Japan's, or Tokyo's, tallest building, the Tokyo Sky Tree. Famous Japanese swordsmith Yoshindo Yoshihara made it from a piece of the Gibbon meteorite that fell in Gibbon, Mambia in 1838. He actually, because I mean, meteorites, there's a lot of iron and ore and whatnot in them. You know, most of these, you know, they're not really, people call them space rocks, but they're not really space rocks, but they're mainly big hunks of metal. I mean, that's how they survive their, you know, entry through the atmosphere. You know, most of them burn up, but the ones that make it to the ground usually have like a high, you know, iron content. And you know, that's why they don't completely burn up. Well, he actually, you know, melted down a chunk of this rock and made a traditional samurai sword out of it.
Dude, this thing is 4 billion years old. Did you see that? That is ridiculous. That is crazy.
Well, the meteorite is, because it was in space.
My mind is blown.
Carbon dating or whatnot. But yeah, this thing crashed in like, you know, 1838. So it's been on Earth a couple hundred years. I don't know when he actually made the sword, but yeah, they have the sword on display with a chunk of that meteorite. And if you're ever in Japan and decide to go to the Sky Tree Tower, it's there in the lobby on display. Which we've seen meteorite swords in, the Avatar anime? Dude has builds a sword made out of meteorites.
Yeah, and apparently this isn't the first time this has happened. Apparently another guy, Tony Swatton, created an exact replica in 2013.
Yeah, so... he's the one that does the, it's pretty cool, Man at Arms, I think it is, on YouTube, where the guy recreates swords from movies, cartoons, and whatnot. I mean, he's done Captain America's shield. He's done real batarangs. The guy's a famous blacksmith. He's made sword. He made all the swords for the Pirates of the Caribbean movie. Anytime there's a sword in Hollywood, this dude has pretty much made it, and he does it.
So
really
this sword
in the
is taken from
style.
The Last Airbender from the Avatar series, correct?
Yes, and he actually. Made that version of the sword, and he put like a few like chunks of some meteorite in it just to make it, you know, realistic. But yeah, the actual Japanese sword is pretty much all all meteorite metal.
Dude, that is freaking awesome. I'd like to see some of the guys from Cold Steel get a hold of that and go to town.
Yeah, yeah. If you get a chance, you should really look up that Man of Arms series on YouTube. He even did the Sword of Omens from Thundercats one episode, and watching somebody like hand forge that stuff is just amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, anytime that's a skill set that I wish I had. I mean, that was another reason I was trying to get into the whole leatherworking thing.
Yeah, I've always wanted to be able to buy an actual, you know. Not the Renaissance Festival knockoffs, but an actually combat-ready forged sword. But they are usually stupid expensive and outside my budget.
Absolutely. Yeah, you'll drop more on a sword than what you will a firearm in most cases.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to buy a real Japanese samurai sword built in the traditional way, it's going to cost you like several thousand dollars for some of the cheaper ones I've seen.
And then the other aspect of it is you've got to get some kind of training because unfortunately,
yeah,
you know,
yourself.
Well, I mean, you know, there's so much skill that has to go into properly handling and how to utilize the sword.
Yeah,
and
even like maintaining and sharpening it, there's traditional methods that you have to use.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you had something else to...
No, I was just going to say how freaking awesome that is. Like, I want to see a video of this thing in action.
Yeah, in the in our show notes, there'll be a link to this article. I believe they have the Man at Arms episode in the article where you can watch him make the anime version of the sword. But yeah, that's something I just thought was like pretty freaking cool. Another thing, since you are the spider guy, and something that scares the shit out of me, it's been raining spiders in Australia.
I mean, I got to look into this. So literally, do we have a downpour of spiders, or are these like, you know, flying spiders that, you know, weave a little bit of air and the air picks them up and moves them about? Like,
well, you've seen these. There's been photos. I've seen them on Facebook where he just shows like a field covered in spider webs. And apparently what's happened, well, Australia seems like, you know, everything in Australia will kill you. I mean, they got the most poisonous snakes there, most poisonous spiders, alligators, you know, all kind of crazy shit in Australia. But what's happening, apparently it's kind of a quite common thing. These spiders will basically weave these almost like parachutes, and the wind, that's how they migrate, is the wind will pick them up and carry them like long distances.
Yeah, and I mean, I've heard of that, you know, where spiderlings, I mean, you know, once they hatch out and get to a certain maturity, they will spin essentially a, you know, little web that will catch wind and basically act like a kite and fly them wherever. But to hear about this
and these things
on
will actually,
millions of yeah. spider scale is
and not only
crazy.
Will the individual spiders do this, but they will actually link up in the air and, you know, they're combine their webs and stuff. So you can come out and see where like a whole tree is covered in spider webs where these things have landed. And currently the big migration is happening in Goulburn, New South Wales, Australia. And it's literally like raining millions of baby spiders every day. These webs, they call them gossamer. It's like a very lightweight, almost like a balloon effect of spider webs that carry it. That's why they pretty much, there's spiders in every continent of the world. I mean, they even find dead spiders in, you know, whatever, Antarctica and stuff, because these things will travel that far on winds, but they get there and they freeze. So
yeah, I mean, yeah. That's I was reading, and I may have skipped ahead a little bit here, but apparently, you know, typically the first land animal to arrive on new islands formed by volcanic activity are, you know, spiders due to this nature. Like you said, yeah. The long distances. Like, I didn't realize how vast of a distance they covered. I figured it would be, you know, maybe 50 or 100 feet or something. But
yeah, they've been seen as far as like, you know, 1,000 miles from land, and even weather balloons that are 16,000 feet in the air taking, you know, atmosphere samples, have they found spiders on those balloons. So these things are traveling a great distance, and like I said, it's not as common around here, but you know, in Australia where there's, you know, lots of open land and lots of spiders, you're definitely seeing this more often. But yeah, that's, like I said, I don't mind spiders as long as they're not on me, but yeah, to open my door and see like the entire farm covered in spider webs, that would like freak me out. I'm like, nope, it's over with. I'm never leaving my house again.
I'm just gonna burn this thing to the ground. it's gonna be acnophobia, literally.
My brother would never go to Australia if I showed him these pictures, because he's one of those dudes that are straight up like, you know, arachnophobic. And one time we were camping. And of course, when you're camping, you see spiders or get spiders there.
Yeah.
And then we had this one, like, I'm talking itsy, freaking teeny, like the tip of a pencil spider in our tent, hanging from the roof of the tent. And he would not go to sleep because he's sitting there with his mag light watching the freaking spider because he thinks it's going to, as soon as he cuts off the light, it's going to fall on him. So I threw a piece of string at him and it hit him in the nose and he cracked himself in the face with the mag light trying to kill the spider.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. It was hilarious. I'm like, hey, finally, yeah, he's unconscious. I can go to sleep now. He's not keeping me awake. Oh, but, you know, if it starts raining like freaking big tarantulas from the sky, that's it, man. I'm becoming a hermit, never leaving my nerd cave.
I don't know. See, I don't think it's going to rain big tarantulas because, you know, I mean, they got some weight behind them and stuff like that. Now, tarantula spiderlings, which, you know, would be the size of your, you know, normal small house spider, that's very possible. I mean, that's like my little pumpkin patch tarantula. I mean, that thing is just barely bigger than, you know, the ballpoint of a ink pen right now, you know.
Yeah, so, that's nope, not gonna happen, dude.
But in another 3 or 4 years, you know, it'll be, I don't know, probably 3.5-4 inch leg span.
Yeah, nope, I'm out. I'm tapping out now. I'm not if I go to Australia, I'm staying in the city. I'm not going to Spiderland.
But dude, these things migrate. So who's to say that, you know, you're not in the city and all of a sudden, you know, an entire building's covered in spiders and...
Oh, fuck no. I mean, have you ever seen that old, freaking, Shatner movie, Tarantula?
Yes.
Yeah, that's how I envision. Like, the fucking spiders are, like, taking over and killing everybody. No.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Spiders are good for the environment. I mean, they keep so many insects, mosquitoes, and stuff like that at bay. I welcome them.
As long as they stay out of my, like, bedroom and stuff, I'm cool. But with it, one tried to land on my laptop when I was sitting in bed, and no. I was like, oh, I threw my phone across the room. Because I was looking at my phone, and it literally, like, came down between my face and the phone. I was like, yeah, like I said, you're cool, you're in the corner, I'll let you live. You get in my space, sorry, dude.
Yeah, I mean, and it's different. You've lost your privileges. I got spiders in my bedroom, but they're caged.
Yeah. Oh, and well, yeah, speaking of, like we said, the spiders being some of the first things to show up on land, there's pretty much a brand new island that has just popped up from volcanic activity, and it's the Nishoshima volcanic island. It's like 620 miles south of Tokyo. It's been erupting and has formed a new island. And the reason why this is kind of a big deal is it gives scientists the opportunity to see how plant life, animal life, all that stuff evolves. I mean, you're starting with a blank slate, fresh environment, and this is kind of gives you a opportunity to see how, you know, the world develops.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, you know, a brand new ecosystem from the very beginning. Which I we have the spiders that are going to land on the island.
Yeah, we know the spiders are going to get there first. But yeah, you know, and birds drop seeds. Eventually, you said it'll go from being a rock in the ocean to an actual, you know, island with vegetation and animal life. And it's an opportunity for biologists to study how a ecosystem develops and evolves over time.
I'm curious to see how that plays out. That's all. This is going to be something that we'll need to keep an eye on because, I don't know, this facet, I mean, I watched the documentary the other night on, you know, basically the forming of universes and how at the center of every universe, scientists basically discovered a supermassive black hole that at some point just stops consuming and allows planets and stuff like that to form and everything. So, you know, this part of science really, really intrigues me. So
yeah, this is an opportunity to do some, like, Darwin-level research. I mean, there definitely can be some breakthroughs out of this development. And speaking of weird biology and stuff, they have discovered the first warm-blooded fish. I mean, most fish are cold-blooded animals, and this right here is the first one we've discovered that, you know, it actually got, you know, a warm-blooded fish. They call it the OPA, not to be confused with Oprah, but it's this giant. I mean, it's kind of like flat and round, but it's like I'd say the size of a garbage can lid. The ones they've captured so far, and basically it is able to generate heat from the flapping of its fins and have special blood vessels that will, you know, move that heat through its body and keep it warm.
Well, dude, looking at this fish with the red fins and everything else, like, I mean, it looks warm-blooded.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing looks like it's got flames, you know, for each one of its fins.
It's pretty wicked looking. And NOAA, which is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, I believe, whatever NOAA stands for. But, yeah, they've discovered this fish, and this fish lives, like, 250, miles or, I don't know, it lives way down there in the ocean where most stuff is, you know, cold-blooded and moves very slowly because, you said, it's cold, so the fish and stuff that exists down there aren't your fast-moving fish you see, you know, closer to the surface. But this thing being warm-blooded is kind of like the A-list predator down there because it can move a lot faster and you know, longer than its slower counterpart that it's feeding off of.
This is really awesome. I'm just kind of reading.
Which is kind of scary. So if we get, like, warm-blooded sharks and stuff that can, like, outmaneuver the rest of us, we're screwed.
I don't know, man.
Don't go in the water. There's sharks in the water.
It'll be okay. It'll be okay.
I need a bigger boat. Yeah, I mean,
we just need a boat in general.
Salsa shark. But yeah, that's, I said, and that kind of wraps it up for science this week. I said, so we learned, stay out of Australia, it rains spiders. Stay out of the deep ocean, there's warm-blooded fish that can outswim you. And yeah, if you need to fight aliens, use a meteorite sword.
All right.
All valuable lessons learned this week.
I mean, all right, dude. I mean, next it's going to be you and Bear Grylls or something, you know.
On the next Survivor. All right, well, that we'll be right back with some nerd news.
Stay tuned.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in nerd news.
And welcome back to nerd news here. So before we get into all the goodness we have, let's go ahead, Joe. Let's recap our final thoughts on the cigar.
Don Pepin Garcia original, the blue label. To me, I like that it started off real spicy, but it didn't like continue throughout the entire cigar. You know, as we got to the end of it, it kind of mellowed out a little bit more and became much more smooth. Yeah, a smoother smoke. It still had a lot of flavor and some very complex taste, but I like that upfront spiciness. And I haven't got that in a cigar recently, and then like I said, the kind of the smooth creamy flavors at the end.
Yeah, that smooth finish for me was a true highlight. I mean, and not only that, but the construction of the cigar. I mean, I got to say, even being outside in the windy conditions, I mean, I never once had an issue with the cigar trying to canoe on me or anything. It maintained an even burn. Overall, I would recommend the cigar to just about anybody, that are looking to look for something a little bit different that's tried, true, and proven.
Yeah, definitely a good new smoke that, like I said, with it. This being the first time we've tried it, I'm definitely going to try more of these.
Absolutely. Today, we're going to take you down the Fury Road.
Yeah, this is going to be our review. We literally just got back from watching Mad Max Fury Road. So if you haven't seen it yet and you don't want to, hear any spoilers, just go ahead and fast forward about 10 minutes and we get on some other news stuff. But we're going to give our review of Mad Max Fury Road.
Absolutely. I mean, we talked about it on the last episode of, the outstanding reviews that it got from Rotten Tomatoes, which is just absolutely like unheard of with a 98%.
Yeah, or 98. I mean, like I said, it's been out for whatever, a week or so, and I've not had a chance to see it until tonight. And all the reviews and stuff I've seen online, none of my friends that have seen it have had anything bad to say about it. So I was like, I've got to finally make the time to go see this. And if you get a chance while it's still in theaters, definitely go see it, because it's worth paying the extra $2-3 for the 3D. Because, I mean, it's...
Yeah, the way the film was so shot epic. And everything else, yeah. I mean, 3D just... Dude, it was mind-blowing at times. I mean, there's just so much action and everything else. I mean, all throughout the film.
It
pretty much grabs you by the balls and doesn't let go.
Yeah, it's almost a endurance test to sit through that. My eyes were hurting because I didn't want to blink through the whole movie. I was like having to like freaking wipe my eyes because they were like watering from not blinking. I'm like, because it was not a slow minute in the movie. It was freaking just like,
I mean, it was action, balls action, to the action. Wall, yeah.
A few character moments, but then back to action, action, action.
So, yeah, I mean, this franchise overall has been in around for 30 years. And
we talked about the original Mad Max. I believe it was the birthday episode.
Yep.
And like I said, what, 79 for that one. And now this is, we're still getting new Mad Maxes. And they've even already released, I haven't looked it up yet, but they're already a title for the next movie. So now they're definitely planning to start making this in kind of an ongoing series again. And if you haven't watched Mad Max or Thunder Road or Thunderdome, Road Warrior and Thunderdome, you can really, it doesn't rely too heavy. I mean, there's definitely
I mean, least. Some of the more
Definitely Easter eggs and references to the other stuff, but this is definitely can be a standalone movie. If you've not seen the old stuff, you don't have to know what happened beforehand to get what's going on in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, basically to set the premise, I mean, this is a post-apocalyptic action film where, you know, gas and water are scarce commodities and, you know...
Yeah, the world's pretty much a desert planet with just kind of few oases, and the main villain of the movie is the guy who pretty much controls all the water. Like, before it was like, you know, gas was like this guy kind of his Immortan Joe, which is the guy you see in the trailers with the weird skull mask thing, which is also kind of if you watch the original 79 version, the guy who was the head of the biker gang is the same actor who plays Immortan Joe. So even that's kind of a little Easter egg back to the original. But, you know, he runs this kind of oasis and controls all the water. So he's in charge and you're kind of subjugating all the people. And he has a whole clan of...
Half-Lifes.
Yeah, they call them the Half-Lifes. They're basically, because like I said, this is like a post-nuclear war type thing. And these guys are all...
I mean, they got mutations.
Mutations,
got cancers,
and stuff like that. And he's kind of made these guys his fanatical... You know, an army of these whited out bald guys that run the desert for him.
Dragon Con, if I was looking for a character, I mean, I could pull that one off naturally. Just get some white grease paint, and I'd be ready to go.
Yeah, you may have to do that for Dragon Con this year because it's you paint some fake tattoos on, you're good to go. Yeah, and like I said, then there's the other cities. You see the other bosses. You see I think they have. I forgot what they call his town. It was like not Coliseum. Because he basically controlled water and food. And there's another town called like Gas Town that controls the fuel. And there's another town called Bullet Farm that produces all the weapons and stuff that they use. And of course, you know, we see Max. As you know, as he always is, just roaming the desert alone, even driving the same car from the original Mad Max and Road Warrior movies. I mean, he starts off.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, you know, there's quite a few references to the first one, or you know, to the previous films. But like you said, you can go into this film necessarily without that background. I mean, I'll tell you that there was a lot of stuff that I missed in this film that I'm going back and reading about, and I'm like. You know, it's a film that I've definitely got to see two or three times to really catch all the different, you know, reference points and things of that nature. But the introduction to, you know, the multiple factions, if you will, was an awesome plot point.
Yeah, and like I said, he kind of, like I said, starts off in that original car, and he's got his leather jacket from back when he was a cop. So there's like these little... There's nothing that you have to know anything about the original movies to get, but there's definitely little Easter eggs to the other movies that if you are a fan of the series, you'll be like, oh, that's cool. That's this from this other movie. And the whole plot of the movie is the Immortan who runs everything since, you know, everybody's mutated and stuff. He has this group of slave wives that he's trying to breed, you know, uninfected, you know, children from. And, his, I guess, chief enforcer who runs his battle caravan to get the gas and stuff, she escapes and steals the wives and tries to free them from slavery.
Basically, yeah. I mean, I think it's basically a forced breeding program. I mean, these women are hand-selected for, you know, their looks to produce, you know, the perfect son and everything of that nature. So, you know, really interesting. I mean...
And, of course, Max, you know, gets caught and they... trying to kind of use him as a
universal blood donor or something.
They just want to use him for like spare parts and blood to keep his army alive. And then, you know, he escapes and ends up hooking up with these girls that are fleeing and, you know, car chases and, and battles ensue.
Yeah. I mean, and it's awesome too, because the soundtrack to the film, the only time you hear music is when you have the badass band truck.
I mean, it's been in all the trailers, and you see the one of the trucks is like this kind of weird semi thing with a whole like stack of speakers and this one dude with a flamethrower guitar and like four drummers behind him. And so the rest of the movie, there's no background music or soundtrack to it except for when the bad guys start getting closer, and you hear the music every time they're starting to get closer. So only the scenes where there's an actual car battle going on is there a soundtrack that's all being produced by
which is
the
actually
dude on the truck
quite frequently. Because I mean, just about this whole movie is a car battle and just all out war between the different factions and stuff. So
yeah, there's very brief pauses, but yeah, the most of the time it's a straight up car battle, and the cars too. I wanted some of these cars from this movie.
Yes.
They're like the stuff you would see in a post-apocalyptic, where they're mostly off-road vehicles that are cobbled together from whatever spare parts they can get. I mean, the main bad guy, Joe, drives a monster truck double-decker Cadillac. It's like two, 50s or 60s Cadillacs stacked on top of each other with monster truck tires.
With about a 5-foot ground clearance.
Yeah.
I think it's
wicked. Thing is awesome.
Like, when I said I wanted a truck, that's kind of what I had in mind.
Yeah. I mean, mobile band truck. which I really hope you're playing the music from the truck underneath this, because, I mean, I want that soundtrack now just for that song.
I mean, I think we should just play it throughout the entire segment, that we have to come up with some kind of remix, on the Fury Road again.
And that's another thing, too, about this movie. Anybody who's watched the original, I swear this whole race of guys were descendants of the Road Warrior, because they all have these weird, cracked-out speeches that when they start going, crazy into battle, they start screaming. Like, one of the main guys you see, he's like, you think he's dying. He's like, no, if I'm going to die, let me die victorious on the Fury Road.
I mean, and, as big of a character as Max and some of the antagonists, one of the things that really struck me about this film that I thought was unique is how empowered the women are. The women have such a strong role throughout this film and everything. And, with a lot of the superhero movies and things that have come out as of recent, you don't see the women having those types of strong roles. So yeah, I think that was one of the things that really helped.
Yeah, because, I mean, they start off as enslaved, but then they, become warriors themselves through the course of it. And, they're battling for their freedom right alongside Max and was it Furista or Furia?
Furiosa, yeah. I think.
Charlize Theron's character, who's a badass. She's the controller of the battle wagon, as they call it. But yeah, this, like I said, all the weird speeches those guys give just reminded me of the freaking biker gang from the original movie. Even the leader of Bullet Town or the Bullet Farm, he gets blinded and he goes he's all of a sudden he's blindfolded and he's just like shooting machine guns blind, I am the scales of justice. It's the craziest shit, which,
hitting nothing you're intending, but, whatever.
I mean, living in that world, how can you not be freaking crazy anyway? So I can understand what's happened to these guys.
Definitely. I mean, hands down, folks, if you haven't seen the film, I encourage you to go experience it in 3D. It is,
Not very dialogue heavy. I mean, it's a lot of action.
Yes.
Oh. So what else is going on in the news?
Well, we had a little bit of a release, a spoiler, if you will,
on the Fury Road. this movie caused a whole game where we just add on the Fury Road to anything anybody says. We have annoyed people all night with this. So if you see us and we say on the Fury Road, that's why.
So, the first Captain America Civil War death has been leaked.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to be an extra on a movie, freaking don't ruin it for everybody else. But yeah, one of the extras on the filming of Captain America, I guess they were filming a funeral scene, and somebody tweeted out a picture of the funeral, whatever you call it, the flyers and stuff that you get at funerals. And so now we know that Peggy Carter apparently dies somehow.
Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert!
Which, I mean, she was getting pretty old in the last Captain America, so I can see why.
Yes.
It's not too far of a jump for this. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of a dick move to release that.
Well, I mean, I definitely see that in this instance. There's always, the big debate on, I'm sure we'll get, a little bit of trash talk. You guys drop spoilers all the time, blah, blah, blah. But, at the same time, part of being a geek and a nerd is, you know, being on the up and up and trying to keep up, you know, as things are released. So,
but yeah, but as you know, if you're someone actually involved, you know, there's always stories and stuff coming out and pictures,
you know, have you know, some random person like, oh, I was here and this happened, blah blah blah, yeah. And you know, that's sure definitely that's, a dick move.
It's probably not something that's a huge to the plot of the movie. I mean, hell, it may be, but you know, to ruin the filmmakers, you know,
either that or you know what
it's
happens.
It's gonna make it bad for the other people that want to get into, you know, being an extra. And you know, if you do something like that, you're definitely not gonna get, you know, invited back to be an extra on anything else.
No, I mean, and it may be a thing now that it's been leaked that, you know, and they end up showing it in an official trailer or something like that, yeah, at some point. Who knows? You know how they work it, or I don't know. You know.
But in the non-spoiler category, there's also been a bunch of set photos that have been leaked or released or whatever.
Yeah, so from Suicide Squad.
Well, no, I'm still talking about Captain America. Yeah. I mean, we've got a picture of Cap's suit in this movie, which looks pretty much like what he was wearing in Avengers. We see Falcon in his suit, but somebody we've not seen yet is the character of Crossbones is going to be in this movie, and now we get to see what his... You know, because we saw him in whatever Winter Soldier, but he was just kind of in military gear. He wasn't dressed up as the character of Crossbones, and now he's like, you know, got this, you know, skull mask thing on, and like, you know, very piratey looking with some kind of like metal fist things that he has. So he's probably going to be one of the big bad guys in this movie.
Absolutely,
which has kind of turned into Avengers 2.5 because pretty much all the Avengers have been announced to be in it except for, I think, Thor and Hulk are the only ones that have not been released that, yeah, they're going to be in this movie.
Well, Hulk's still trying to figure out after Age of Ultron what his next play is going to be, and Thor's, you know, probably still dealing with...
He's off on Asgard doing Asgardian things. Like, yeah,
I got to get this brother of mine under control.
Yeah. I mean, Ant-Man's going to be in this, freaking War Machine, Iron Man, Falcon, Black Widow, pretty much everyone who's been in a Marvel movie. And we're getting the new characters of, you know, Ant-Man and Black Panther are also going to be in this movie. So this is definitely going to be, like I said, Avengers 2.5.
Yep, absolutely. Which, I mean, it's hard to have a Civil War without all those characters in place. So
yeah, and it's not been announced yet, but, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, since they're still filming it, to see Spider-Man show up in this at some point, since, you know, we know he's going to show up at some point in a Marvel movie.
Absolutely.
And he was the character of Spider-Man was big in the, you know, comic book version of Civil War, so I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't show up in this movie at some point.
Definitely. Kind of along the same line, switching gears from Marvel to DC, we've had quite a few costume reveals, as well as some set photos released of the Suicide Squad film.
Yeah, and that earlier photo we got with the all tatted up Jared Leto as the Joker, apparently that wasn't fake, because you can still see the tattoos in the set photos that's been released. But you know, now he's actually wearing kind of a purple suit and looks a little bit more Jokery.
Yeah, he definitely looks less juggalo-ish, if you will.
I don't know. He still looks pretty juggalo, because the dude's got grills on, man. He's got freaking shiny teeth. It's weird. But you also see in some of the clips you're seeing him pimp slapping Harley Quinn and driving around in this purple neon freaking Lamborghini that I guess is his Joker mobile in this movie. So
I mean, that's just definitely a douchebag of a car for him. So. I would not anticipate anything less.
And we've seen some as Will Smith as Deadshot too in some of the photos and stuff that have been released. I'm interested to see how this movie turns out. I've always liked kind of the story of the Suicide Squad, and they've done some stuff with the Suicide Squad on Arrow. So I'm looking to see how the movie version of it's going to turn out.
Absolutely. So, I mean,
and freaking Harley Quinn looks like Harley Quinn. I mean, it's awesome.
Yeah, spot on. Yes.
In the actual, yeah, the some of the photos have been released with the Joker is her in like street clothes, but they've also released some official photos of her in the full Harley makeup, and it, like I said, it looks like straight out of the comic books.
Absolutely. So, anything else, Joe? As far as news or anything of that nature, I mean, that's really what I came to the table with.
No, I think that'll about wrap us up. Any final thoughts on Kevin Smith or any of the other things we've talked about today?
I mean, nothing that I can't already say. I mean, Kevin Smith, just phenomenal all around, you know, guy. Love all of his work. I mean, I guess can't stress it enough. Stop in by Cutter's Emporium.
Tell him we sent you when you get your tickets.
Yes.
And then come hang out with us at the show.
Definitely.
Because like I said, we will definitely be there. And also, we've started a Zazzle store where you can buy cool Cigar Nerds t-shirts, hats, and whatnot. I mean, hell, there's even a dartboard, and I put a bunch of random shit on there. But that is at Zazzle.com/Cigar Nerds Podcast. And also, if you go to our Facebook, which is Facebook.com/Cigar Nerd, I believe, there is a link to the store on our Facebook page now. There's a button that says Shop Now. Click on that. It'll take you right to the Zazzle store so you can get cool Cigar Nerd t-shirts. So you, when you come out to hang out with us, you can rep that you're a cigar nerd as well. Check us out on the ESO Network, ESOpodcast.com, our site, CigarNerdPodcast.com. Hit us up on Twitter, @CigarNerdPod. Check us out on Instagram, also @CigarNerdPod. And with that, I wasn't even supposed to be here today.
Good night.
And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.